sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The election is over and the winner is who? And the markets dive and then soar? Well, we have winners and losers on this incredible reversal of fortune. And our guest today is Danielle DiMartino Booth, who is coming out with a great book. We'll talk more about this and all things related to markets and finances on episode number 484 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, I have to tell you, I'm pretty excited about our guest today. Our book, Fed Up, will be coming out in February. We'll talk more about that today, all about the Fed, and some of the inner workings of what's going on over there. I just got off a 2-day cruise. It was the inaugural cruise of the Harmony of the Seas by Royal Caribbean. It was a special invitation it was involved with a charity, but all the big mucky mucks were on the boat. The CEO of the company and all the managers and vice presidents and presidents and all the different divisional heads were on the ship, and just a lot of travel agents, a lot of dignitaries, because it was the inaugural of the largest ship in the world. 6,600 passengers and like 2,800 crew, which is a lot. And it was kind of cool. It was a special deal. It was drinks were free. There's no. As a matter of fact, there was no cost for anything in terms of food, specialty restaurants, drinks, the game rooms, a variety of things were all free. It was a special event, and it was really, really nice. The rooms were big. It's not a commercial for this. The food was okay. It wasn't great, to be honest with you. I've been on other ships that they have just fantastic food, like the Norwegian cruise lines I've been on in the past. But it was quick. It was a 2 days in total. But anyway, that was a nice event. I guess, obviously, the only thing that was... The bottom line was that all the conversations on the boat, of course, were all about the elections, which seems to be spreading throughout the U.S. pretty quickly, before and after. We thought there was going to be a little bit of silencing of some of this after the results were out. But, of course, this incredible victory by Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton kind of threw everything into a bit of a tizzy, it seems, that people are very unhappy. As a matter of fact, we're seeing around the country and around the world, there are protests going on. People saying, oh, not my president and all that. I wonder, I don't know, if the other party would have won, if Clinton would have won, if we would have seen so much of this. Now, one of the things that we have to discuss and really focus in on with regard to the election was how the talking heads and how pretty much most of the market soothsayers out there were completely, as of right now, were completely wrong about some of the things that were going on. Now, in fact, I thought that while it would be a close race, from everything that I was reading and everything that I studied and researched on this, it seemed that the presidential potential was leaning towards Hillary Clinton. I think most people would agree with that. And then this incredible upset. Now, once we found that Donald Trump was leading in the polls throughout the evening, markets sold off dramatically. As a matter of fact, the S&P futures were locked down, limit down, for a little while there towards, I guess, about midnight or so, about 5% down overnight, and then started to climb throughout the evening into the early mornings. And then we had a pretty remarkable turn of events where markets actually were up the day after the election. Pretty interesting. Most people were talking about a major market catastrophe. Now, to be fair, emerging markets didn't fare well. We did see a significant climb of the U.S. dollar. We saw that gold got smacked pretty hard. Copper was up dramatically because a lot of the talk right now is how some of the programs and plans that Donald Trump will put into action will be very much market beneficial in terms of the infrastructure types of plays and also in domestic growth. So what did we see? We saw an amazing rally in small caps. Small caps were up about 10% for the week. Those companies that have less to do with international trade and exports, but really focus here for the most part. And at least that's how investors see them. Bond yields shot higher. Bonds came down. Probably one of the worst days in decades for bonds, the days after the election. And if you remember something, we had talked about the potential for a big bond event probably about a month, 2 months ago. And I hammered it home and I talked about it after the fact that, you know, there's going to be something that happens in the markets. Rates are potentially coming up. The economy could do better. And the Fed may, in fact, look to raise rates in December. And again, the experts out there were predicting that if Donald Trump got the election, that we would probably have a Fed that was on hold for a while. But now that we're seeing that there's potentially going to be a very significant change in the overall dynamic of the government, where we have a Republican as president and now control of the Congress is Republican, that we'll see no longer any gridlock like we've seen for the last 8 years or so. There's been some times that obviously I think in the beginning where we had a Democratic led, but nonetheless, this idea that, wow, laws will be able to be passed so much easier now, and there'll be the opportunity for things to get passed through much quicker. Well, that was signaled in the small caps and in the bond area and in other areas of infrastructure build. Now, one of the areas that was probably the hardest hit, and a lot of people were scratching their head about this, was the large cap tech industry. Those companies that have a lot of money overseas, offshore, that they would possibly have to repatriate. And why would that be the case? Why would these companies get hit? Why was Apple and Google and Microsoft and the names that you could think of that have all this money offshore hit? Because there's now a real discussion that they'll be forced to repatriate part or all of that money and be taxed on it, potentially at a lower tax bracket. And again, I keep on mentioning the words possibly, potentially, and likely. These are things we don't know yet. But the markets are trying to place their bets ahead of all of this. So these companies, the large cap tech, the NASDAQ, did not participate at all. As a matter of fact, it was pretty weak throughout the time period post-election into the end of the end of the trading day on Friday, because there's a concern that they'll be nicked pretty well with some taxes, maybe 10%, but still, that's a pretty good number compared to what they have to pay at this point. Biotechs were on fire now that the Democrats are no longer in charge, and they will have an unlikely ability to really point a finger any further at many of the biotechs and healthcare. Now, HMOs got just smacked really hard, obliterated, as a matter of fact. If you look at Tenet Healthcare and a few other names out there that are involved in the Affordable Care Act and that are HMO-based and hospital-oriented, these companies got hurt really badly. With yields coming up, utilities also got hurt. And like I said, the big winner really was the small caps as well as infrastructure plays. We saw U.S. Steel and Freeport-McMoRan, copper and steel related, really do well. The gold miners got hit very, very hard with gold coming down as it has. The dollar coming up very strong. And so that's really what's going on there. The other thing that got hurt pretty significantly was the gun makers. You may be wondering, why would the gun makers get hurt here if we have a Republican-led and a Congress and also a president now? Well, the idea is that going into this, there was a major concept that there'll be a lot more gun reform and regulation, and therefore we need to go and get those guns quickly. And now that there'll be relaxed gun control, people can buy it whenever they want. So the gun makers sold off probably about 20%. Smith & Wesson, Sturm Ruger, they sold off pretty significantly because now there's no impetus for people to just go out and run out and get guns. They could do it at their leisure whenever they want into the future. And banks, with the widening yield curve, the spread with rates coming up, did really, really well. All of them. The financial companies, such as insurance companies that are not involved in healthcare as much, but like a MetLife, Prudential, wow, those stocks did really well. REITs, real estate, on the other hand, did not do so well. Interest-sensitive plays. So it was almost like what was working over the last year or two stopped on a dime. The realization that all of a sudden the plans are going to change, regulation may be removed on some areas, and some things may be repealed or new regulation on other areas. It was an instantaneous change of events, and the markets reacted accordingly. With a technology and large cap that was leading the markets for a while to selling off, and material companies that have been shunned for a while, and biotechs and some healthcare really coming up very strongly. Just an amazing turn of events overall. So Apple closed down at $108. They have about $150 billion overseas. And if they're required to bring some money back, whether it's, let's say, $100 billion, there could be a $10 billion tax on there. Also interesting was the marijuana stocks. They really fell off pretty dramatically, even though many states that were supposed to be voting and possibly adding it to either the medical marijuana use or for recreational use, they were approved. It seems, again, that it was a buy the rumor, sell the news kind of situation that went on there. So the bonds did really poorly, like I mentioned earlier. Inflation is squarely in the minds right now of investors, because if, in fact, this new administration is able to provide a $500 or $600 billion infrastructure bill and put it out pretty quickly, and also reduce taxes individually and on a corporate basis, it is thought that this would be a very inflationary situation, which then leads us all the way back to what the Fed may do. The thought was that the Fed would not, in fact, be able to do anything in December meeting if Donald Trump was elected president. Now it's looking much more likely that that's going to change, because if these new potential rules, regulations, and initiatives are going to be quote-unquote market supportive for some areas of the market and also very beneficial for the economy, well, the Fed all of a sudden can kind of step back and say, well, finally, we got that fiscal stimulus coming in, which we've been begging about and begging for years. We needed not only to have monetary policy to help us out of this slow growth malaise, and now we have it. And therefore, what may happen here is a very significant inflationary trend that goes on, and it will force the hand of the Fed not only to potentially raise in December, assuming that markets stay comfortably at levels that are where we are today, or approximately a little bit lower, a little bit higher, and in fact may force them to do a lot more rate hikes into 2017 into the future. Because if all of these actions are that will be put in by this next administration, this next regime, come in and are in fact very inflationary, that will force them to change their entire positioning on what they were doing. And because they could now take a secondary lead in terms of how to stimulate the economy. Of course, one of the biggest losers of the week, you probably have thought about this, was the Mexican peso. With Trump out there, you know, talking about a wall and ripping up trade agreements and renegotiating trade agreements, Mexico and the emerging markets and some areas like Hong Kong had a very tough week. So right now we're in a very, very interesting standpoint with markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average hit an all-time high. The S&P is creeping up there. Again, small caps are up like 10% for the week. Where do we go from here? Was it simply a major initiation of a short squeeze that occurred in the early hours of the markets and people saying, okay, well, the election's over? Listen, the VIX came down from 22 or so. Even right when the market opened on Wednesday, the VIX was already starting to lean lower. And that's when markets were still down and there's a lot of question about what was going to happen. So the short squeeze that could have initiated some of the move originally on Wednesday morning from that 5% drop in that that limit down lock of the futures markets overnight and the massive drop in overseas markets that day, maybe it started there. And people said, well, you know what? We're relieved that the election is over. At least we have an answer here. We have less potential blockage of any kind of initiatives because now we have the Republicans leading everything. And whether or not it's good or bad is a different discussion entirely. Whether you're agreeing with some of the things that are going on or not, the fact is there'll be less ability to have blocked initiatives because of the the control of the House and the White House. On, you know, there may be a repeal of things. We may see right to life abortion issues come up here, which is going to be very interesting to see. We may see a repeal or at least a change to Dodd-Frank, Glass-Steagall. A lot of regulation that were on the banks, possibly like Basel rules, may all of a sudden be up for grabs at this point. That's going to be very interesting to watch how the reaction is to all of this, or if maybe this gets softened along the way. So you got to kind of re-look at all the things that you knew in the past and how things operated and what was actually working, what wasn't, because if all of this does come into play here, there's going to be a big change to the market environment. And we'll have to see over the next 2 weeks, I think, how things play out. Because already after the big surge, there's been a little bit of a softening here and a reality check. And I think into next week, et cetera, if in fact we do see the dollar continue to rise as we've been seeing, that's going to eventually hurt profits of U.S. companies that do a major amount of exports. The big names, your consumer staple companies in particular, could be under pressure by this dollar gain that we've been seeing. And it may not just stop here. That dollar may continue to see an incredible rise with what's going on and the fact that the Fed may be looking to raise rates, at least in December, and if there is inflation, a lot more into the future. So keep an eye on all of that and look at your portfolio a little bit differently now than you have been in the past. When we get back, we have some listener questions we're going to answer and go over a couple of other things with regard to the Trump basket of areas to look at in terms of stocks, something that we talked about before, but I broke it down a little bit more about the positive and negatives, and we'll just get to our guest. And our guest today, Danielle DiMartino Booth, who is an author for the upcoming book titled Fed Up, An Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. She also has a great deal of background working with the Federal Reserve of Dallas, served as an advisor with on monetary policy to Federal Reserve President Richard Fisher, as well as a great background in all sorts of areas related to this industry. So welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great this afternoon. How are you?
Great. So listen, we recently had an election. We had a limit down on the futures. We had all sorts of anxiety around the world with Donald Trump, having this upset win. And bond prices have dropped significantly. Yields are up. And it's been kind of an interesting situation because everybody was thinking that, hey, Donald Trump gets in and the end of the world is going to happen with markets. Meanwhile, markets surged higher. And it's kind of an interesting situation there. I was kind of wondering, just a quick comment from you, what's going on?
I can't tell you what's going on in the market and why we've seen now an almost 1,100-point swing. It's really remarkable. The last time we saw something of this magnitude was during the flash crash.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even more confusing to me, unless there was a massive amount of short positions put on the broad market in the middle of the night, and anything's possible in a global interconnected financial marketplace, right?
Right.
This could be the mother of all short cover rallies in a very short time frame because last I checked, the 10-year yield is north of 2%.
Yep.
And that is big, big deal.
Yeah, kind of the markets in a way did the job for the Fed in terms of raising interest rates. One of the things that going into the election, I would be very suspect if there was so much shorts put on that it's taken an entire day to pull them off and keep on moving the markets higher. I was of the thought that it's similar to at least my indication of what happened post-Brexit, which was there was so much panic that the central banks around the world decided to just flood the markets with liquidity, and they did so in a way over and above the maybe the required amount. And therefore, there was this kind of resurgence of equities within days. However, in this circumstance, maybe that's to a degree similar. The difference now is that we are seeing this rise or surge in yields, and that really would not take the place of that excess liquidity, would it?
No, it absolutely would not. I mean, you've seen a tremendous amount of effective tightening in the markets, which really presents a challenge in terms of squaring the circle with the stock market's behavior.
Yeah. So let's kind of scoot on over to now. Well, there was some discussion when Donald Trump was running that he's going to kind of put his crosshairs on the Fed. Now, the Fed, Janet Yellen, can't be replaced, I guess, until what, 2018, I believe, unless something, I don't even know what will happen. Maybe she'll just don't want to do this anymore under the current administration. But you have a lot of, and especially with the book, you have some criticism of the Fed. Take me through some of that.
Well, I do, and I like to think that that I'm a lone voice out there, because if you look at some of the other books that have been written, for example, by former Fed officials, they're all very deferential in tone. It's as if they're trying to keep a secret pact of some kind. My take as an outsider looking in for 9 years, I was never invited into the fold, and I never asked to be admitted either, mind you. But my take on the Fed is that what started off as well-intentioned, perhaps, in 1987 with the birth of the Greenspan put, has, as a factor of time, become corrupted. And I think that if you were to give the members of the committee truth serum, they would all tell you that there is no such thing as the wealth effect, and that monetary policy in recent years has become counterproductive in terms of increasing the inequality gap, and that it's time for a rethink on Fed policy. But I doubt we're going to see that.
And not only that.
Well, I take that back. We might see it because of the outcome of this election. And I'm not referring to the White House. I'm referring to the Senate.
Right. Exactly. Now, the Republicans obviously have control of the entire government, in a sense, right? They may make it a lot more easy to get things through, and to some of the comments and the criticism that we've had in the past, which was basically just stopped due to the fact that there was a split government. But what I find fascinating when I think about the Fed is how the Fed, which, if my memory serves me correctly, weren't we the first country back in the day of Jekyll Island to create the Federal Reserve system?
No. The Bank of England has been around forever.
All right, Bank of England.
And there was certainly a blueprint to go off of with the Bank of England. The Bundesbank existed, the Banque de France existed. A great book to read on kind of the history of all of those is called The Lords of Finance, which is one of my favorites.
Mm. I've read The Creature from Jekyll Island, if you read that one. That one's another
And that is certainly beautifully written, and it should be on everybody's shelves after you read my book, of course. But the Federal Reserve, as it was conceived and how it is now, is definitely unique in its structure. But I would point out to you that the reason I brought up the Senate a few minutes ago is because Obama has not been able to fill the two vacancies on the Federal Reserve Board for years, plural, because he couldn't get any of his nominees through the Senate confirmation process. That's no longer the case with incoming Trump. And it will be interesting to see if the chair of the Fed is going to start, for the first time since 2005, with standing dissent from governors.
Hmm. Now, at the same time, what we have the Fed here, which is doing what they do in an unchecked manner, if you will, we also have this all around the world. whether it's the names you mentioned of countries or Japan or China or wherever it may be, there's, you know, different interactions with this. But you mentioned the wealth effect, which is the thought of, well, you know, if we raise asset prices, then everybody's happy and it trickles down, if you will, into the economy, into various different purchases. And we look at the way that things have gone in Japan over time, where they're fighting deflation for the last couple of decades, and there's been no real significant advancement in in inflation, or, you know, the economy's been kind of slugging along and doing what they're doing. Where aren't we kind of in the same situation? And if so, what could the Fed possibly do anyway to change? They just only have so many tools they can work with, right?
They do only have so many tools they can work with. And what concerns me about some of the public statements that Janet Yellen has made about the potential in the event of future disruption of buying corporate bonds in America, as Mario Draghi has done in Europe, my concern, given the kind of atrophied state of capitalism and of industries in this country, is that the Fed could push even further the death of creative destruction, the whole idea that companies have to be destroyed if they're inefficient, ineffective players in order to maintain competitiveness. Obviously, Japan has taken that notion to the extreme in terms of keeping non-competitive players alive. And my concern is that the Fed has accomplished this as well over the past few years by implementing low interest rates that allow the weakest links to stay alive through the financial markets, through the capital markets, bond issuance, etc. And my concern is that they would even delve further into this intrusion on capitalism, given the opportunity of the next recession and the limited toolbox that they have at their disposal.
One of the things that I've been, you know, harping on for some time has been the low interest rate environment that we've seen and the ability for corporations to issue bonds, then do buybacks and issue dividends. And that's a lot of things, a lot of ways of creative accounting that have enabled them to continue to see a decent EPS number and to keep this whole thing alive, you know, the whole rally alive. And the idea that, well, you know, analysts say X and we beat it by one penny. And, you know, you can do that by shrinking your share float, et cetera. Won't the buying of bonds on a corporate basis even accelerate that process by the Fed? I mean, in other words, if the Fed was to go in and buy corporate bonds,
it would absolutely accelerate the process of financial engineering, which, as you rightly point out, is a big goose egg when it comes to productivity and generating economic growth.
Mm-hmm. So what are the criticisms you have of the Fed? Do you think they should be overseen and checked and open up their books?
I do in the sense, look, I think that the Federal Reserve should always be an independent organization. But by the same token, I've got sympathy for the Jeb Hensarlings of the world, for example, because of the fact that there appear to be no checks and balances on monetary decision making. My time on the inside more resembles being inside of a kitchen where the cook is throwing spaghetti up against the wall and seeing if it sticks. There's not enough discipline when it comes to how monetary policy is made. And if it requires Congress checking the Fed's powers, then so be it. Because the Fed is obviously not willing to check its own powers and or take a hard look in the mirror and determine that what they've done has not been beneficial at all for the economy.
I think that it's become very clear to many of us that when the Fed lays out their target rates and says, well, at that point, we're really going to bring in all of the stimulative actions and bring back rates to normalization, et cetera. When they talk about, well, we get a 6% rate of unemployment and a 2% inflation rate, for example. Okay, that's great. Then all of a sudden they change it and they move the needle, right? They move the target. Well, you know, not right now. We're going to, you know, we see some things out there, which these mysterious things out there that could be a problem, right? You know, there are some headwinds. Like, for example, they constantly are predicting and creating models of what they believe inflation will be in 1 year and 2 year and 3 year, what the unemployment rate and other things too. And they're notoriously wrong. So it's not like, although investors put a lot of faith in them, their economic models are no better than anybody else's. Are they?
Completely agree.
Yeah, but we put so much faith.
We put
so much faith in them. It's crazy.
It is, and you know, there was a very interesting study that came out. Oh, I don't know, maybe 18 months ago, that showed, with the input of the authors of the models, the authors of the studies, 51% of the Fed's conclusions via models could not be replicated. Think about that for a minute.
That's pretty pretty ugly.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So if the Fed is not all-knowing and all-seeing, and if the Fed has blunt tools that don't actually get there, if we didn't have the Fed, hypothetically going back to, let's say that they did a bid, an enormous amount of work to get us through the really hard times there. We're right now at, even though it's right off the bottom, historic lows on interest rates. What happens if things tip over the other direction and all of a sudden the economy starts to slow down a bit? They are really limited. They're even more limited with what they could do, except for go creative, you know, much more creative. I mean, like we saw in Japan, like we saw in Europe, this asinine negative yield model they have.
They implemented that in a banking system that relies on variable interest rates. They completely shot themselves in the foot. And we happen to have something called the money market fund industry. And we have a very low supply of cash equivalents in the form of treasury bills. So implementing negative interest rates would effectively put the money market fund business out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And put, in theory, they would want for people to go out further on the risk spectrum. In practice, what happened in Japan would happen here. The number one selling good for households, safes. Safes you can lock up your yen in.
Yep.
Period.
You know, I got a letter the other day from Charles Schwab. We do some business with Charles Schwab. And I got a letter from them saying, this is just an informational point to let you know that we are updating our margin account agreement. And one of the lines talks about that. It says, if the interest rate on the benchmark for margin goes below zero, we are still going to be charging zero. In other words, you won't be. So they're setting themselves up for negative interest rates.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I was a little bit taken. I mean, it was just last week that I got this.
Yeah.
So.
And that shows you that there's some kind of preparation going on for the inevitable end to this business cycle, which, as you know, has been drawn out for longer and longer periods of time. Every time the Fed monkeys with nature itself.
So let me ask a question, and maybe we can get some straight answer on something that's been troubling a lot of people for some time. And that is, so the Fed supposedly is quote unquote market agnostic, even though they are obviously trying to press the wealth effect, which is directly related to assets. But do they look at the markets and say, oh, the market's down a lot. You know what? We better either hold off or we better think about doing something to add to the monetary base. Or are they actively watching this in a manner that is day to day, let's say?
Oh, I think they absolutely are. I think they're acutely sensitive to what happens in the stock market. And unfortunately, it ends up creating the perception that the tail is wagging the dog, and worse, that their integrity has been compromised.
Oh, their integrity has been compromised for a long time, but specifically, I think, last year when they held off the interest rate rise till December, that whole little thing they went on with, and they held it off. And then this year, when everybody, the Chinese,
blah, blah, blah.
Yep, we got to be worried about the Chinese or Ebola or Zika or whatever it may be. There's always an excuse that can come up. And I remember a day, I'm old enough to remember the time. Well, I remember a lot of things way back, but I remember the time when it was reasonable to have a 5% interest rate or even a 4%. That was kind of the normalized rate for Fed funds rate. And, you know, you would do things. And I always bring this example up. If you and I were in outer space for the last 5 years and we came down, didn't know anything that was going on here, and we were laid out all of the economic conditions that are currently in effect here in the U.S., and we spread them out and we said, okay, we see these. And somebody said, what is the appropriate interest rate for Fed funds rate at this time, we would not be saying less than one.
No.
Right?
No. It's possible that the damage has been done. And it's possible that there may be a lower permanent Fed funds rate, natural Fed funds rate. That being said, I think we should vow, please, to never again breach the 2% floor. Never again.
Mm-hmm. That would make a lot of sense. So again, this is Danielle DiMartino Booth. We're going to have the information about how you can read her great articles. One thing I want to talk about, this article on your website, you talked about beer goggles stock market. I want to go through that just for a couple of minutes. When I think about the title of that, it's very telling that obviously that we're looking at things through a very warped sense of our visuals. So what do you make of this?
I think that investors are prone, because of Fed policy, to see the markets in a much more palatable light than they otherwise would if they weren't looking through beer goggles at the end of the night, which always make the girls look prettier at closing time, to be completely impolitically incorrect.
Yeah, are we allowed to do that now, by the way, that Trump's in office?
I think there might be a comeback for non-PC. Just saying.
So we could start using stewardesses again, and instead of sanitation engineers, we could call somebody a janitor.
Maybe even secretary.
Now you're going. Now you're going. What is creating the beer goggles? Is it the Fed? Is it that, or is it also the lack of oversight on using, for example, non-GAAP earnings and companies being allowed to basically bury things in the footnotes? What is it? All of this?
I think it's certainly a combination. Of all of that, I think if you bring back your financial engineering into the mix, that's also been an influence. I think there are a lot of factors that have influenced and shaded and turned darker the beer goggles. But certainly what corporations do to obfuscate their actual results is telling. That's why I think that investors are always best off to try and follow trends in revenues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's
a lot harder to hide, a lot harder to fudge the sales.
Right. Yeah. Top line. You know what the numbers are, of course. I mean, obviously you have to think about, well, if there's a lot less expenses, of course, factors involved in it, that's important. But unfortunately, there's about 75 other lines they put in there that you don't know what they're shifting from one place to the other. Listen, we're going to leave it there because I know we're limited on time. On the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, we're going to have the links to all the articles that you can read from Danielle, as well as just a reminder, get this on your, put a little reminder on Siri, that she has this book coming out February 2017. It's going to be called Fed Up, An Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. So that's going to be awesome.
Please do me the service and throw the Amazon link up. Yep. Pre-sales are going wonderfully.
Oh, okay. We'll do that. Absolutely. And I'm going to read it myself once I get my fingers on it. Thanks for joining us. Great. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your time as well.
That definitely looks like a book that is going to be a good read. I just like how throwing spaghetti on the walls the way they do it and kind of having no real... planned. They have plans, but they'll change at any given notice, and all is dependent on the market. Something we've known for a long time, but nobody will admit. A couple of things I'll mention. We got some listener questions in here. We'll talk about the Trump basket of stocks and sectors that you may want to be looking at. I'm going to rattle off a variety of names, so get your pen and paper ready, or your notepad, or your iPad, whatever it is that you'll write this down. I want to mention before we do this, by the way, that if now is a time that you're thinking, oh man, what do I do with my portfolio at this point? Listen, we manage money. You know that. If you don't know that, we manage money. And we have several different strategies, the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, the Aero Strategy, and a whole grouping of what we call the Global Allocation Strategies, where we have a much more traditional and a bit more conservative view of markets in terms of how we manage them. A lot of diversification there. So we have a couple of very aggressive strategies arrow has been right on over the last, I guess, month and a half. In particular, once we finally got beyond this time period where we had a consolidation that was not going anywhere, finally, the arrow is pretty good at picking up some trends. And while we were in a little bit of a funk there for part of the year this year, clearly things are much better at this point. So take a look at that. You go over to the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you want information about how we manage money, if you want to chat and talk a little bit about what's going on with your portfolio and maybe how we can help here at Horowitz & Company, go over to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and just click any of the links there and you'll get information. Let's see. We have some questions and we're going to get into the Trump basket. There was a couple of questions. There was a few here that came in with regard to this whole issue. Eric S. wrote me, and in this issue with regard to the money fund reform and how it affects you, and this whole issue with regard to the break the buck, if you will, and what's going on. I got to tell you something. Right now, Eric, here's my answer. Interestingly enough, while it is something that was a concern and it is something that could be a concern, I'm not terribly concerned about it because obviously it was the refinement and there could be some issues that are involved with some of the money market funds. That's why maybe you want to be in treasury money markets or in the cash accounts of some of these firms. I'm not quite sure how this is all going to play out moving forward with the potential for a lot of repeals of some of these regulatory situations that have been brought upon us over the last several years in the financial area and whether or not these are all going to stick or be repealed. So I'm just going to hold off my discussion on this because I really do think that there is a great potential for a lot of this to be repealed. Robert S. wrote me, he asked me about, he said, Andrew, everyone is saying that the Fed should increase the interest rates or all hell will break loose. All I see with increased rates are higher costs for consumers, increase in the federal debt, increased costs to manufacturers and service companies and state and local governments. The total outcome will be a rise in inflation, which hurts everyone except those individuals who buy bonds, etc. Let me just stop right there. So if we have an increase in rates, if you bought the bonds, you're going to actually lose money on the principal. If you have a bond itself that is an individual bond that you bought directly, not inside a fund, not inside of an ETF, not inside of a basket of any sort or a closed-end fund, but an individual bond, you're not going to have to worry about that because if you bought a 4% bond that's due in 10 years you turn it in and unless the company went bankrupt, you'll get your money. The problem comes in is, and let me just say one other thing. If you have that bond, you're not going to get an adjustment to your interest rate either. So you're going to keep making your 4%. Now, the other thing is if the Fed increases rates, it actually slows down the economy, doesn't tick inflation higher. Inflation could tick higher on its own, but the rate increase is not inflationary. The rate increase itself, if you think about it, is actually deflationary or economy constraining. That's the whole point of it. But I do agree with you on this whole issue of, well, what happens to home mortgages, etc. But, you know, I got to tell you something. Robert, I've been there. When mortgage rates were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%, and people owned homes, you know, just fine. Because what happens is when you see rates that get to those levels, if they're not just being raised arbitrarily and they're being moved higher to combat inflation or to at least bring them back to normality, that means that you have wages that go along with it, et cetera. So I don't think the Fed's going to, in fact, just raise rates for the heck of it. But I do think that if they do raise rates, it will actually be a benefit in terms of getting people off of the fence. Whereas now you're like, well, rates are low. I don't really need to buy a house right now or rush into it because I'm not really worried about it. Rates will stay low for a long time. If rates start to move up, don't you think people will be like, you know, maybe I need to actually move on this. Maybe I need to get that mortgage. Maybe I need to refinance. Maybe I need to do what I need to do in order to get myself to that next level, get off of the fence of deciding that, oh, I'll do it a later date and thinking that you can procrastinate for a bit longer of a time. I'm comfortable at this level. Maybe what you need to do is actually do something. Maybe you'll find that there's a lot of impetus that goes along with rate hikes that will actually move along the economy a lot faster, increase the velocity of money, constrain some areas, of course, but I just don't think that that's going to be a big issue. Now, the other thing you mentioned is that people with fixed income, well, they'll be hurt by the inflation. But wait, people with fixed income are being slammed by the low rates right now. You're at a fixed income 20 years ago, and you got, let's say, an average of, 4% on your money. Today, you're getting an average, if you keep it in a bank or a CD, of less than 1%. So if you're on a fixed income, how are you going to actually afford anything these days? I would much rather have a higher interest rate and have some inflation in the economy that is constrained, at least, or tempered and held back a bit by the increase of rates than a deflationary environment. It's just, I don't think that's doesn't work too well. There was a question in from Andrew C. He said, he's asking about, what's my take on the current Deutsche Bank cocoa bonds? And is it realistic to see that these triggered for liquidity in the short term, and do we see CDS on the rise? Without getting into too deep about what cocoa bonds are and the various bonds that are in Europe and some things that are going on in terms of CDS rates, which is essentially, CDS rise when there's risk. Risk on financial assets, risk in the financial environment, on companies, on banks, whoever, it's basically a bet on the liquidity and solvency, and you can hedge out some of the risk using CDS. But I think that there is going to be a CDS rise, yes, ex-US, with the dollar moving up as high as it is, and that's just not a good thing, generally speaking, for the rest of the world. It is good for us because we can actually buy things on the cheap from overseas, but when we see their currencies going down, that's not the best thing in the world because they can't necessarily buy our products. So while we can buy their products at a lower cost, they can't buy our products because the dollar has gone against them so dramatically. So do I see a domino effect by this? I don't, everything is, I hate to say this, but right now, for the next couple of months, everything is up in the air. We don't know how the dollar is going to actually play out, if it's going to continue to rise on the recent presidential election and what the markets are thinking for the future, if the U.S. is a lot stronger and we have now potentially for a high level of fiscal stimulus in there, and that's going to actually create a much higher GDP, and if the countries around the world continue to do what they do, with utilizing monetary policy alone, that's going to continue to drop their currencies, especially in relation to the U.S. dollar. So we are in a very precarious moment right now. It is a very difficult thing to really look out into the future, and I'd be stupid if I was going to try to project out that far because a lot of unknowns are there right now. We couldn't even get a good read from some of the experts, the top line experts in the world, about what's going to happen post-election to markets. Essentially, everybody was wrong, at least up to this point right now. This could be just a relief rally, an election relief rally. Everybody was so exhausted from the whole process that we're just like, okay, it's over. I'll put money to work and let's get it on. And I'll put out what I think is the best bets for the future. And, that's it. But I find that some of the things right now, I would not be too much of a rush to lay down too much investments in one area or the other, because I do think there's going to be a lot of scrambling around by people for short covering, for moving into other areas and to move out of some of the sectors. And it's going to cause a lot of problems. Sorry, I can't be a lot more absolute about that, but it just doesn't make sense to be anything other than, having my feet on both sides of the equator right now, just both sides of the situation balanced. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Trump basket. I'm just going to run through some of the sectors that are positive and negative for this. So the first thing we have to, I think we could all agree on, is that industrials, things like, GE, we can look at CX, and we can look at aerospace and defense, Northrop Grumman, NOC, Lockheed, LMT, LLL, GD, HON, healthcare. Well, clearly there's going to be this a potential for just a reversal of fortune here. So you have companies like Anthem, ANTH, J&J, UNH, VRX, MNK, GILD. I'm just giving you the symbols so you can write these down quickly. Energy, ExxonMobil, potentially. Also, of course, the basket of coals, the coal miners, the coal basket, if you will, or the coal ETF, KOL, Halliburton. Steel, you have U.S. Steel X, you have NUE and STLD, so you have Steel Dynamics in there as well. Let's see. Clearly, did you see the private corrections or the jail companies? Wow. GEO and CXW, wow. I mean, CXW was up, I think, 50% at one point the day after the election. Clearly, one of the things people say that, well, Trump, make America great again. Well, I'll tell you one thing I think we all agree on. Trump, make volatility great again. I don't think there's any question about this, that the volatility index is going to be all over the place. Watch that carefully. On the short side, things like UTX, Boeing, they have a lot of reliance on Asia. Auto stocks, you know, they can start, quote unquote, ripping up these trade deals. So maybe negative on GM and TM and Ford F. So GM, TM, F, BA, I mentioned earlier, UTX. So there's definitely a long list of clear winners that we can come out of this, because it will be, again, a reversal of what we've seen the stance be from the former government overseeing everything. So we have, you know, the Obama and the Congress, and now into this new, and then what everybody expected to be with Clinton, which would be more of the same. And now we have what possibly could be different, because now we have Trump and a Republican-controlled Congress. So keep that in mind there. I think it's kind of interesting. Aerospace and defense be good. Industrials good. Healthcare good. Energy, questionable depending where, but clearly coal and probably solar and clean energy not as good as we've seen. Bonds coming in. Inflation. I'm interested in why watching TIP, one of the better performers this year, but really sagged a little bit after. Nothing terrible, but sagged a little bit post-election, even with the thought that inflation would be there. But in the back end, their bonds, so that's what happened there. So there's a lot of potential winners and losers. And if you just look at a sector breakdown last week, it's very, very clear as to at least what markets are betting on, or at least unwinding and reestablishing. We had a big unwind and then a reestablishment. And a lot of the reestablishment trades, which, for example, let's look at two. I think that would be interesting. Freeport-McMoRan and U.S. Steel. Those two had major short interests against it, were really doing very poorly for a long time, and now just pouring money into them ignites a short squeeze on top of the fact that people are looking to go long. So you got a lot of movement there. All right, we're going to end it there. We have some more guests coming up next week. Make sure to get your reservation in for Fed Up, the book from our guest today that spoke about all things on the inside of the Fed. Danielle was great, I thought. And if you have any questions, like I said, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and we have lots of ways for you to get in touch. If you have any questions, just go to the Ask Andrew tab, or there's a form on the bottom of this post that you can answer as well. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you on Tuesday night with John C. Dvorak on DH Unplugged. If you haven't listened to that, make sure that you do. You can find that on iTunes or any other podcast system, service, etc. DH Unplugged. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.